the North Pacific, the Bering Straits, and they worked out a theory. And their theory, and this is the theory on which the occupation of North America and South America by Europeans is founded. And the theory is that if a European vessel, Spanish, British, Russian, is sailing along the coast of North America and discovers land, that land belongs to the Europeans because they discovered it. Now, that's the theory. Now, you can say, hey, but wait a minute. There were millions of people, native people, living there for a long, long time before Columbus and before the Russians. But the Europeans acquired the land, they occupied it, they colonized it. And if you go to a law school and you say to your law professor, hey, what right did Russia have to acquire Alaska and then to sell it to the Americans? What right did the Spanish have to Mexico and Peru? The law professor will say, because they discovered it. I mean, it's that simple, and that's the theory of international law, that if the Europeans discover a country, even if it's already been discovered by other people thousands of years before, it's theirs. Now, that's the way they justify what happened almost 500 years ago, because, of course, there's another year that is coming up that's pretty important. That's not just 1991, that's 1992. Because that's the 500th anniversary of Columbus coming in sight of the of America, 1492. Your questions
wanted,
are.
Well, he went on and on about it, but there's 75 students taking this course, but he two audio conferences, and this one student kept using that as a stumbling block.
Well, it's a good question.
It just seems to end there and hold up the class when I think it's more important things, because angst is pretty complicated.
But I can tell you that international law has now changed, and in the 1970s, the International Court of Justice, the World Court at The Hague, decided that the theory of discovery no longer applied. That is, Europeans couldn't take land just because they claim to have discovered it. If native people are living there, it's their land. And that was a case involving the Western Sahara, part of the Sahara Desert. But that happened in 1975, I think, and it's a little late to well, we're learning about international law. It's easier to understand in some ways than ANCSA.
Question and answer time.
She's pointing that ray gun at you.
Well, since you were in the subject about Columbus discovering America, the white man came to America from across the ocean, in the name of God, freedom, pursuit of happiness, and they formed the 13 colonies. And I don't know, while they were writing the Constitution, they might have owned some slaves, stating we the people, well, being equal. Made friends with the Indians, had Thanksgiving. They went westward next. Oh, they sent people across the land to find the trails. Probably maybe lust for gold, what took them west. But at first they give them guns, right? Trade them for their furs and stuff. And back then these Indians, they have guns, and then the white man introduced whiskey to them. After that, they start fighting with these Indians. And that just gave them a right to go across the land and kill them off. And how this affects Alaska is we're 150 years later. And I don't know, they can't just come around and shoot us anymore. They shoot at us with what I call paper bullets. Back then it was a fast death, now it's slow. I heard Jonathan talking earlier today about talking to, before they, when they were in the process of, they know that someday they have to make the settlement with the Alaska Natives, and they did not recognize that we're individual groups. People here are not Eskimos. Eskimos are there. They got their own traditions. Eskimos that live in different parts of the places have different traditions. They don't all have the same form of traditional government. I mean, that, you know, that the people that made the, I mean, that drew up the Alaska Land Claims Act, they stereotyped the Alaskan natives. They stereotyped Eskimos as living in igloos, stereotyped Indians as you go up there and say, like if you go in front of Congress and you go like this, you say, "Chance." And then some senator from Louisiana is going to say, "Hey, I thought Indians were supposed to say how." You know, well, we know how, we just want chance. Anyway, the land claims was not talked to. I mean, the relationship of how they passed it was not, they didn't talk to the individual people, the individual governments itself. It was like Jonathan stated out, maybe it was something to throw these people off. The government of the United States definitely had a plan for Alaska and its resources, but there's this group of people in the way. Now, I don't know if the Yukon Flats is an important area in Alaska. It's one of the main targets. And they might have just, you know, I got a theory that they might have just threw these people off track by saying they're going to put a rampart dam in or something. And the tribal governments that were here and did exist should have been talked to, just like you're doing. You're going around to the main centers. The main centers of this area would be Fort Yukon. The main centers of downriver would be some of the bigger villages with some of the smaller villages on the outside, but still that would have been their central government. And when they passed this Land Claims Act, they were talking to the wrong people, and they gave these people here a toy, a corporation, you know. White men know what corporations are, but these people here are, you know, a lot of us don't understand it. A lot of the problems that exist that we have to live with now are like some of the older people in this since 1971. Somebody may have been 80 years old, and they have no chance to get anything out of this land claims. Just a will, maybe to give it to somebody else, maybe for them to sell it or them to get something out of it. Nothing is done. Everybody stresses, even in Fort Yukon, a lot of people stress things about the elderly and the old ways. And I more believe in the younger people. There was no consideration in the act for the younger people. Let's say there was 100,000 Alaskan natives with a quarter Indian blood or more in 1971. Okay, why weren't all of them given 160 acres? It's just a small little dent in the land. You know, I don't really agree with the Land Claims Act itself, but if you added all the people, not just the people that were over 18, and gave everybody there 160 acres to something you can fall back on. You know, what little it is, everybody should have been treated equal. Me personally, I feel that I've been discriminated against. You know, I can't help it. I've been discriminated because I was born in the wrong time, and I wasn't old enough, or I'm just born into this situation. I don't know how these people are going to deal with people like that are younger like I am. It's going to be pretty tough.
Okay, thanks very much.
I'll say your name.
Anything to add?
Oh, a little bit later I'll add some.
Okay.
Do you want to say your name?
Paul Schufeld, Fort Yukon.
And also, did you keep before you were talking to me? The kids you have?
No, it's all right.
No, go ahead.
I'd like to address about stock ownership under ANCSA as a board member of Kuchaje Corporation. I would feel that as a person, an individual, and a shareholder in my respective corporation, first and foremost, I have to hold my other 740 shareholders in consideration each and every time we make a policy regarding whether it's a policy to go into a venture where we shall be a profit making venture, or going into something like exploration, where we'd see it would do consideration, it would do a great deal of good, taken into consideration our shareholders, because we have a moral and personal obligation to each and every shareholder. We stand and we are your voice. Your concerns are our concerns. And I would like to stress that I hear a lot of comments. I would give balance, I would weigh every one of them. A lot of them are good, and a lot of others are nothing but rubbish, not worth being talked about or heard or passed from one person to another. And I like to say that you have a very good policy decision-making board, and you should take into consideration that whenever you say something, whether it's for the good or the bad, you know, we are sitting on the board of Kuchaje Corporation. It's helpful and it's hurtful. I was very fortunate when I was in high school here in Fort Yukon. I remember when land claims, I didn't know what the meaning of land claims was. I was fortunate at the time that they started having their village hearings at the school, in the school cafeteria. And I heard a lot of good that was stressed by the people, people like Jonathan, Mardu, people that have passed on from us, Peter Simple, Hannah Salmon. And what we heard then has helped us a lot. And just sitting there in the cafeteria, that was when it used to be our assembly room, it did us good to listen and to hear our elders. And we helped them and we honored them, we gave them esteem and respect. Just to listen, to be able to listen to these elders. They were our forerunners. And we are now doing what they have taught us to do, to be leaders within our own village system. So every time something says anything, we take it into consideration. But we hold you, shareholders, first and foremost. Whether it is for the good or the bad, I think that every share that every Native person owns up to 1971 and up to and beyond 1991 should benefit each and every shareholder, whether of our village corporation or our regional corporation. Also, us as Native Athabascan Indian people, we have a God-given moral obligation to each and every one of our relatives in our family. I have nephews and nieces who aren't going to benefit from the ANCSA that was passed in, ANCSA bill that was passed in December 18 of 1971. But when you go out and fill out your will or your probate papers, take into consideration you have little ones that are following in your footsteps. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey man, really? All I worry about is my little nephews and niece. I don't worry about myself. 1991, okay?
And just say your name.
David. David English.
Thank you. Any folks on this side of the room would like to say something? I don't know how long that cord is.
Let me get rid of my shakes here. Dig out my notes. I didn't lose them. Well, first of all, I'd like to acknowledge Clarence Alexander, the president of the Fort Yukon Natives. Correct me. And next thing on my thing is the museum. It's a pretty good building. Proud of the Fort Yukon people for this, and proud of the Fort Yukon people for putting on this. They always seem to come out. But you guys are going to go dry. That just goes to show your count, your votes do count. It's just not the people that's running it, it's you. It counts. You've mandated a thing to get rid of banned liquor, follow it through. I'm not trying to be a preacher. I don't like it myself. I like Fort Yukon. Well, we'll get down to business. I'm glad to be here. I'm just I guess I'm giving a testimony. I still can't. I'm still shaky. I'm kind of concerned about the 14C. My name is Solomon John. I'm the president of Circle Village Council. I'm here giving a testimony for what I think about 1991 for ANSCA, what I think of it. Around the 1920s, they had the white people of Circle had their own land claims. They picked two white guys to pick up to claim land as big as those two skins up there. And they designated as the Indian Village about a land about as big as that light bulb. So now we're in a controversial thing about entity, land entity. For Circle, there's two governments in Circle, but there's only about 60 people there. Well, as president of the Circle Village Council, I would just like to say that I support a council that will take responsibility to be entity for these lands. By law, the statutes of 14C states that they will give 1,240 acres for municipal use to any entity. But in Circle, we have that problem where two governments want that land. It's a unique problem. One government is all Indian, the village council, and another government is all white. It's not really racial. They want all of us on each other's side, but I wonder if any other village have this problem. But the Circle Village Council backs up that, and we will write a resolution that we will be responsible for that entity, for that 1,280 acres, for that municipal land. And we'll, instead of saying what our younger generation will do for 1991 and all that, I have all the confidence in them. I think they're smarter than we are today with all the education they got, science, computers, space, and what have you. I think they'll think of something better than Alaska Native land claims. But I would like to give them the title for the 1,250 acres that to start on that circle. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. John. Thank you. Well, I'm glad we've heard from the folks from out of town, from Circle and Beaver and
Bill Stevens, GC stockholder. A lot of talksmen said about 1991 land claims being sold by individual stockholders, but I didn't hear too much about subsistence hunting. What's happened? What's going to happen after 1991? Are we still going to be able to hunt moose, ducks, rabbits? And are we still going to be able to trap and use the land traditionally as we have for many years? You know, when you're talking about any kind of American Indians and federal government, there's always a conflict. Judging from history, the government always, the U.S. government always made millions of treaties with the Indians, and usually they broke just about every one of them. And the Indians get so frustrated. That is why you see, a real Indian never trusts the U.S. government, and then they don't trust the white people too. So there's always a conflict. And I'm just, you know, talking from what I read in the histories. So usually there's a fear of 91 because they think that the government or people with money is going to come in and buy up all the stocks, and they'll be left without anything, you know. So as far as I'm concerned, I'm fairly optimistic that things are going to be worked out okay, because a lot of these native leaders are educated, and they're not fighting with guns nowadays. They're fighting in courts, you know, with lawyers. So I think that things will work out really well. As far as the land claim settlement, $2 billion settlement, you know, I don't think that was adequate, you know, because I'm judging from the Prudhoe Bay oil well, you know. They're pumping millions of gallons a day into Seward, and millions of dollars are coming through from that those oil wells all these years, and we only got $2 billion out of it. And they know the oil was there too when they passed that land claims, you know. And I think they just bought us out, you know. I think it could have been more. I think royalties should have been paid to the Indians. That's my own feelings, you know. So, so the worth of that North Slope oil goes into the billions, you know. And $2 billion is just nothing, you know. So, that's my line of thoughts, anyway. But I'm, as far as 1991 is concerned, I'm fairly optimistic that the native leaders we got today, pretty well educated, and I think we'll use the law, you know, for our rights. That's all.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Stevens. Thank you. The question was, what has 1991 got to do with subsistence? Well, people who are engaged in subsistence are using Native Corporation land. Sometimes they're using their allotment. And they're also using some federal and state land, I guess. But if you if your Native Corporation land is taken over in 1991, and the new owner decides he doesn't want anybody engaged in subsistence on the land, he can say that he wants to keep trespassers off. And that would mean that you would still have certain rights to hunt and fish under state and federal law on state and federal land, but the land that the corporations own today, if it were taken over by outsiders, they could exclude you, and you couldn't You couldn't do subsistence on that land. So it would put a big dent in subsistence, a big hole in subsistence.
One more question. Did you think it was a fair settlement, the $2 billion in land claims?
Well, you keep saying $2 billion, and I think it was only $1
billion. Yeah, it's less than $2 billion.
Well, if $2 billion wasn't fair, I guess $1 billion certainly wasn't. I think, as most of these folks themselves have said, that the land is a more important consideration than the money. And I think the real, what is really, what we're really talking about now is how people can hang on to the land in 1991. How the people can, after 1991, hang on to the land they got in 1971. I mean, there's no more land out there for Native people to claim. It's been divided up between the federal and state governments and the Native people. So what Native people, it seems to me, are facing is this. How are we going to hang on to the land that we got back in 1971? How can we prevent that land slipping through our fingers? And that, it seems to me, is the main issue. If you went back to Congress and said, we don't think of $962.5 million is fair. That was the amount of money. Give us some more money. Well, if they said, okay, we'll write you a check for another $1 billion. If you weren't able to protect your land, to be able to pass it on to your children and your grandchildren, that check might not go far. That's what people have been saying to me all over the state. So, and you say, is it a fair settlement? Well, there it is. Congress thought it was fair at the time, and a lot of Native people thought it was fair at the time. And we read about it, that all these Native people were going to be instant millionaires in Alaska. Well, now I'm here to find out what happened. How come you're not all driving Cadillacs? And I'm getting the story, and it's being put together piece by piece.
My name is Hannah J. Salmon. Well, like the way you said half of old people around here don't know what you're exactly talking about it now, and young people. You know, I know when I was maybe 14 years old, I hear about this, people are talking about, but I don't know what they're talking about. Same thing right now, there's lots of old people, they don't know, sometimes you put notice up there, people put notice, lots of people don't know anything about it. Even I'm born in Arctic Village, and I make mistake myself, not only me, everybody else make mistake. Lots of people make mistake. I should have rolled in my own village where I'm born, but I didn't. I'm rolled down here. Well, lots of people make mistake, I know that. That's the way it is today. Lots of people gonna make mistake. Because we're not ready. Lots of people are not ready yet. You see, you're here. We wanna know what you're doing. Maybe you're the only one reading every day. Know what's going on. Not here and half Native don't. That's where we make mistake. I know I don't. And our young children around here, that they're gonna make mistake too. So you guys sitting right here and know what's going on, but have our people know exactly what's going on. That's where our mistake, native people make mistake. Yeah, I don't know anything about 1991, but I'm not worried about myself, but I'm worried about them little kids around there, little children. I'm worried about them guys. And I wish you guys are explaining to people more what's going to be happening in 1991. Let them young people know. You're going to be here one day, have people, maybe just have people here. Don't know how long you're going to be here, but maybe just one day, I don't know. And I wish you guys explain more to young people so they know what's going on. I guess we're all shy. We all see each other every day, but we're all shy. Shy to get over here and speak to you. But I hope you guys explain more to people so the people know what's going on more, learn more. Thank you.
Thank you.
I didn't introduce myself properly, but my name is David. All I want to say is three things: the land and kids.
That's
two. Oh, another one. Come on down. All I want to say is I didn't get my 160 acres. And another thing is, my little nieces and nephews, they didn't get theirs. I mean, I didn't get mine. And I worry about those kids, my little nephews and nieces getting theirs. And 1991, I don't know about that one. I don't know about that issue. That's going to come down, I guess. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, my name's Kenny Williams. I call me Kenneth Williams. Well, me and myself are a little nervous here. Well, it's time for us to learn and talk about to each other, you know. I gotta say something for our kids. I got two boys and two girls. I make this land in poor parcel, sign the will over to the kids last 7-8 years ago. Talking about our land, you know, we're not doing it for ourselves, it's for the kids. I haven't gotten my education yet, but what people are doing, I see them, so I might as well do it. Another 7 more years, I'll be grabbing my pension money, you know. Will I live that long? God only know. I born out in the woods, 65 below in tent. I raised out in the woods. I brought the way to, that's the way I brought up. In my days, we don't get no kind of income. You see up there on the wall, you see the purse up there. That's the way we brought up. That's the only way we get our money, you know. Right now, it's about time for you to talk about this before 1991. I've been working with a seismic a lot of time. Around the Spokane area, I don't know how far, maybe 100 miles away, there's oil around here that they've been searching for, you know. I've been working with seismic. I was doing as a powder monkey. It's a charging dynamite. So I know what I'm talking about. It'll be coming up sooner or later. They know it, but they don't say it right away. They keep it secret until they know for sure. For sure, you know. It's about time for you people to fight this, doing that for your kids. Well, right now, before I went up to come back for class, I've been staying at the land called the Native Allotment. Well, I live on it, I hunt on it, I trap on it, do what I want to do on it. Now I'm building another new house again. So whatever you think is the best for you, you either haul your land, hang on to it, or do what you want to do with it for your own rights. If you want to keep it right, fight it for your kids. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Well, would anybody else like to say anything tonight? We've had a good meeting. 29 people, I believe, have testified, and I've learned a lot. But it's 9 o'clock, but we have time if others would like to speak.
My name is Velma Wallace, and I'd like to speak on a more positive note concerning the younger people that are saying they didn't get a piece of the cake. My parents signed up for land, native allotments, and I don't feel that I've been excluded because right now I'm living on that land, and I think a lot of the younger people should live on their parents' or their grandparents' land instead of thinking that they've been excluded. That's what I have to say about that.
Well, let me thank you for speaking at the beginning of the meeting. You got everybody talking. Anyone else like to say anything? Yeah.
This is Yukon Flats back in 1949. And at that time, the study was done. Fort Yukon was a seasonal, as a settlement, it was seasonal. And you can see that Birch Creek was also seasonal. And way up here at Salmon Village, you have, I think there's a Herbert Village. There's Vinitai, there's different villages there. This is not, this is Christian Village, Vinitai, and Beaver down in this area. But anyway, this shows you that the people of the Yukon Flats were all living in the dark spots before they moved into Fort Yukon. This was started in 1950. That's when the change of the whole system was starting to take place. And this is, I just wanted to share that with you because it shows that where the people are really coming from, as far as the ones that are my age. We have a dark spot right here, and that's a seasonal, and that's, we call it Sho, but right now the white man shows it as Alexander Village. So, to me, it's very interesting because when we talk about land, as far as land is concerned, we're only talking about this little section right here, right here. We're not talking about Yukon Flats. You have to realize that. You're only talking about seven townships. Over our neighbors, they got three townships. Across here, they got one township, I think. I don't know what Circle's got. But in between, there's a big space. And this at this time, when the IRA Council, at that time, during these times, they went to Fort Yukon and had their meetings. And when they did have their meetings, this was kind of a border. And at that time, around 1947, they asked people, would you like to have a reservation? Well, interpretation of a reservation at the time was a fence. Because my parents came home and said, boy, you know what they were talking about? They said they want to build fence around us. But anyway, I just want to share this with you because as far as I'm always, I guess I am in the position to speak for the IRA Council. And there's a... As far as strategies are concerned, we... My throat is dry. We even consider taking seven township over under the 14C3, if it's possible. Because under 14C3, I think it states that any group, or I don't know what the really the law has, how it's written, but it's there. And where there, we do have the right, because it's law, and it says that we could do that. And from that, that's one way that we can think about saving our land. There are other people that are corporate-minded, and the corporate being corporate-minded is fine. Sure, we are responsible to each other. But when we talk about, there are some here are talking about money, and there are some here that are talking about land, and I'm talking about land. We have, and I feel sorry for the ones that are around us because they don't have the economic basis. We don't have economic basis. We don't have any economic basis whatsoever. If it wasn't for the monies that are coming in from a state government, federal government, our community will be in a bad shape. And the monies that are coming in are not forever going to be coming in. Because the way it is right now, we hear every day that the funds are going down as far as the oil revenue is concerned. So that means that we have to develop some sort of a base. And we do not have that base. We do not have the resource. The resource that we have is timber, as far as we know, because we do not have the right to subsurface right. We only have surface. And lucky we're even getting a little kickback from the gravel. And as far as losing your stocks or shares, there are ways that it's happening that maybe you don't realize. When you get a credit from somebody, that's a form of losing your stocks. If somebody ever says, hey, 1991 comes around, if you got a credit and you don't pay it up, they can put a lien on your stock. At least that's the way my understanding is. I don't know if this is true or not, but this is the way I believe it. And seems like I'm going backwards, but I'll tell you about this valley right here. We fought for that valley. Our forefathers fought for it. As far as Indian war is concerned, we have all kinds of legends dealing with Indian wars. We have, oh man, I can get into that because I used to hear a lot of them when I was young kid, because during those days it's just like what the kids like now is that they like Donald Duck or whatever it is, that kind of story. You tell them stories like that, they listen to it. But at that time, we used to listen to stories that were being told to us and the legends that are true. And I'm glad that my friend Solomon brought up that the idea about being dry in Fort Yukon. I think that's, I think the, you have to understand that the state of Alaska consumes more alcohol than any other state in the Union. And that means that we only have about 500,000 people, and there's about millions in some states, and we drink more than they do. And that's the weakness. And that weakness right there will get, that's the weakness that 50% of Fort Yukon would sell out. There are rumors in Fort Yukon right now. And those rumors that are being passed around by certain individuals are not present in this meeting today because they do not feel that they're part of the Native organization or Native corporation, and they in turn feel that they can sell their stock anytime they want. But drug abuse, alcohol, whichever, any way you look at it, if you pop it, pills, any smoke it, and sooner or later it's going to get to us. My only strategy for the whole land conveyance, as far as I can see, as far as the history of American Indians is concerned, about a month and a half ago I was in Spokane, and at that where the National Congress of American Indians, okay, the state of Washington had a initiative 456. The 456 has something to do with resource. The white men there want your resource. They put it on initiative in such a way that the interpretation would not be recognized, but if it does pass, then that means you jeopardize all the resource within that state. And if that take precedence in that state, then that would have meant that it would have kicked off to another state, and it would have got going, and it would have affected us up here. And it's still, that initiative is also being carried on to some other places where the signatures are being accumulated so that it can be put on the ballot and so that it can start over again. And this continuous battle is going to continue forever. Ain't no doubt about that in my mind. The only strategy I have, or the ones I heard down there, was they said, hey brother, maybe we should all learn how to speak Spanish, because there are millions of Spanish speaking people that are native Indians, more than white.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, my thanks to Clarence Alexander for displaying on the map the traditional hunting areas of the people of Yukon Flats. Anybody else like to speak before we adjourn?
Hello, everybody. First of all, I'm from Chalkeetsik. I represent the village of Chalkeetsik, and I think the main issue is to right now is to make everybody in the surrounding areas to be aware of this situation we're in. We have a tough issue that we have to face, and we all know it, you know. And I talked to a few people in the village, and I talked to a few trappers, and they say, what's 1991? What does it mean, you know? And does it mean do I have to go around my trap line when I go trapping, you know? And that's the kind of question they throw at us when we're in council. And personally, I think the people in each village should be made aware of the issues that are facing us. Like this commission right here, taking all these down, we're here at a meeting to discuss the Land Claim Settlement Act. And personally, I don't think Settlement Act, you know, that's supposed to be a settled act. But personally, I don't think it's settled act yet, because we as natives don't benefit from it yet. We have to fight for it, you know. And I don't think that's right, because this is our land. We don't have to fight for it. And all this stuff is coming around to us, and all this law and stuff like that. Something like this should come to the village itself, and I think people should be made more aware of all these issues, individually and village-wise. So that's all I got to say. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Stephen R. English. It's true of this saying that we learn from our mistakes. And we do. In the area of stock ownership, I would like to stress that back in the early parts of 70, there was about 3, 4, 5 people, white people, here in Fort Yukon, who started out as a TV company. They had shares printed up. And since the Indians, the natives, didn't know what the meaning of shares were, they were to be exploited, they went out among the native people here in Fort Yukon and Gwichaje, and they sold these shares, individual shares, to native people here. The original incorporators of this television company, cable TV, I believe it was, were Nels Moore, Mr. Lemke, who at the time was center director, and one other, but I forgot who the other person. There was 3, 4 of them anyway. Well, the people, and one of my brothers so happened to buy a share, I believe, at the time he paid $10 for it. Well, right now, today, where's the share, and where's the company, and how much is the value of the share? It's just on paper. And where's all the original incorporators of this share? That's one good thing about
having a share and knowing the par value of your share. When 1991 comes, your share is going to be of value to you, and you'll have outside people with money in their hands ready to hand you a boodle of money. Say, I'll buy your share for so much certain amount of money. And if you're in dire need, you probably end up selling your share, and that's why we'd like to encourage you to find out how much your corporation is worth. Just find out how much your corporation is doing. Be proud of your corporation. And hang on to your share, because you'll probably be handing it on down in the family. And I'm glad that we here in Alaska were fortunate. It took people like William H. Seward, who originally started the concept of buying Alaska from Russia. And he's one individual who came about buying for 7.2 the state of Alaska as we know it. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes. The question is, when will I be back? I don't think I will be. My job is to go on from one village to the next, hear what the people have to say, and write a report that will be ready in the summer of 1985, and I will be sending a copy of that report to everybody who spoke here today. And I hope that report and its recommendations will help Alaska Natives to decide what they're going to do about these questions. And we're going to Vinatai tomorrow to hear what the people there have to say. And then we're going to the Pribilofs next week. And then in January, we're going to Bristol Bay. And that will pretty well complete our work. But I won't be back in person, but I will be sending you that report. I'll send it to everybody who testified, and I'll send it to the IRA and the corporation and the city. Yes?
Will you have any media coverage so people can learn about this for the next 7 years so they can stop the city? Will there be any pros and cons?
Well, I hope that on the basis of what I've heard, and I was saying earlier, I've heard from about 1,000 people who've testified, I will be able to write a report that reflects what Alaska Native people have told me. That'll be in my report. And if I write a report that truly reflects what people have told me, then it seems to me that you will be able to discuss it. If you think that what I recommend is sound, you can, if you decide to go to Congress, you can say, look, this guy spent a year traveling around here. He wrote a report that shows how we look at this, what we want to do, and we suggest you act on it. There you
You're just analyzing us, huh?
No, I'm listening to you. Yes.
Not be as valid in 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point. Do you mind repeating it for the record in your name?
For the record, Jenny Files, Fort Yukon, it appears to me that you are surveying the population across the state, and you're getting the folks at, let's say, ground level, and where they are, as understanding 1991. But at the end of 2 or 3 years, after they become more informed, then they're able to start making some sound decisions. And at that time, your report is at stage one, where the people now are climbing up the extra steps of the ladder, making different kinds of thoughts and judgments and becoming educated to 1991.
Yeah, well, that may be. But you have to nail the first board to something. We have to start somewhere. And I think that my job is to listen to what people have to say, and I'll write a report based on what people hear and in other villages tell me. And then it's up to them. And if they are thinking about this and arguing about it and discussing it, and their views change over the next 2 or 3 years, well, then they will have to make appropriate choices. But it's an imperfect world, and I'm spending a year traveling around the state, and I'll just have to do the best I can.
Is there any paperwork currently that people could start reading and becoming more informed?
Yeah, there's lots of paperwork about 1991. I don't know whether you saw the Tundra Times. Bill Hess, who's the editor, is here. But they had a big supplement about a month ago that said 1991, and it was page after page. So there's a lot of written material out that I guess has found its way to Fort Yukon. I think that at this stage, maybe it's useful. Well, I wouldn't be doing it if I didn't think it was useful to have meetings like this where people talk about the land, subsistence, the village, shares, the corporation, and without trying to become a lot of lawyers and master the details of ANCSA in 1991. 1991 is a question of choice. What's important to you? Land or shares or whatever? And
as a native Indian, Athabaskan Indian, I thought to myself when Jenny Files started talking that I thought that her observation should be kept for herself. If anything she has to say is not relevant to ANCSA or to the native community, thank you.
Well, I want everybody to feel free to speak at these meetings, and everybody has spoken. We've had more than 30 people speak, and I found it helpful, and I can tell you that I appreciate what each one of you has said. And I will be going to Venati tomorrow to hear what the people there have to say. And as you speak, the whole picture begins to become clearer to me. And I'll write a report, and in it I hope I'll be able to make it clear to others. So don't expect that in one afternoon and one evening we can solve all these questions, but at least perhaps we have made a beginning to understanding them and to deciding what to do about them. You know, there is 7 years. We don't have to decide tonight what to do. So let me just thank you again, and thank you for supper and the meeting stands adjourned. That's a good. Why didn't you say that on the record?
Oh, no. For those of you that's here, we'd like to know if you'd help us sort of clean up here. We're going to also have a little jig dance for the visitors that are here. So if you want to help us clean up and stuff, it'd be more appreciated.